Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The Intersection for the Arts, one of San Francisco's oldest nonprofit arts organizations, could be on the verge of closing its curtain. The Intersection recently announced plans to put half of their full-time staff on furlough. According to the San Francisco Chronicle, the organization has to raise between $400,000 and $500,000 to stay open beyond the end of this year. Many people were shocked to hear the news, and many pointed the finger at the tech sector and the new wealth that is flooding the city. But Randy Rawlinson, interim director for Intersection for the Arts, addressed the issue in a recent Chronicle piece, saying, quote, "People want to find something to blame it on or to press their political agenda, but it has nothing to do with the tech community. We were not hit with a rent increase. Our rent is well under market value. It's about the business model and has been for a long time," end quote. But many artists and art administrators do place their struggles in the context of the current tech boom. Courtney Fink, director of the arts center Southern Exposure, was evicted under the Ellis Act and moved to Oakland after 20 years as a San Francisco artist and resident, and she's not alone. So on today's Your Call, we are talking about how the rapidly changing economy and influx of money in many parts of Northern California is affecting the arts and the livelihood of artists. Today, we're joined by Todd Thomas Brown, founder and interim artistic director of the Red Poppy Art House. He's also founder of MAP, the Mission Arts Performance Project in San Francisco's Mission District. A painter and performer, Todd was commissioned by the DeYoung's Department of Public Programs for the creation of his mural-scale painting, Invisible Passage. He currently sits on the DeYoung's Community Engagement Artistic Council, and Todd joins me here in studio. Hi, Todd. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks.
Thanks for coming in. We're also joined by Kate Patterson, Communications Director for the San Francisco Arts Commission. This is a city agency that champions the arts, and Kate is also in studio. Hi, Kate. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks so much for inviting the Arts Commission to participate in this conversation.
And we're also joined by Ellen Sebastian Chang, Director, Writer, and Creative Consultant. Ellen was the co-founder and Artistic Director of Life on the Water, an arts organization at San Francisco's Fort Mason Center in the 80s and 90s. Ellen has directed and collaborated with Youth Speaks, the Oakland Opera Theater, Shotgun Theater, and Central Works. And she joins us by phone from Oakland. Hi, Ellen. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Thank you for including me in this.
It's great.
Wonderful. Thank you.
It's great to have you included. So first off, why don't you all talk about the changes that you're seeing right now? I mean, we're hearing about a lot of artists that have no choice but to leave the city or relocate their galleries, or in the case of Intersection, and we'll talk about this today, the audience is just changing and the business model no longer makes sense. So Todd, what changes are you seeing and what's different this time around compared to the boom we saw in the 90s?
Well, at the Red Poppy Art House, where I spend a lot of my time, is right in, you know, the heart of the Mission District, which is generally understood as ground zero for the gentrification that's been reported on in the news continuously over the last couple years. And that space has been there for 11 years now. And so over that time, I've gotten to experience how the neighborhood has changed. And there's definitely been a tremendous spike in the last 2 years of conversions of local businesses and spaces into the hands of new owners and into a very different, creating a very different environment and community. I think as an artist, we occupy an odd space, you know, a lot of times understood as being the first, you know, kind of the harbingers of that process when we move into a neighborhood because the rents are cheap. And then we kind of balance between these different communities. In the case of the Mission District, the working class Latino community that's there, and then wealthier residents coming in. So over that period of time, I get to experience, I've seen the changes happen both with artists as well as with the lower, less affluent community, you know, the working class Latino community that's there. And you see on the side of artists, more and more artists that have to leave, that can't afford to be there. And the same with families, working class families, and also a sense, almost a sense of intimidation or being under siege, because there really is a chasm between these two worlds intersecting right now, and it's very tangible.
How has the Red Poppy Art House, which features a lot of artists and live music on a regular basis, how has it managed to survive?
It survived through a vigorous and vibrant arrangement and participation of volunteers. You know, it's a mostly volunteer-run organization. There's only a small handful of us that work from a monthly stipend. You know, I have to credit social networking to helping me realize some years ago how we'd survived, which was really that the place was thriving off the social relationships that were happening there. It was a point of intersection for people coming from so many different communities, and doing that through the arts. But as much as it was about the arts, it's a space of relationships, and those relationships make people want to be involved. They get invested. They give time because it enriches their lives. So that's really what's made it happen.
And that is Todd Thomas Brown, founder and interim artistic director of the Red Poppy Art House. Kate, you work with the San Francisco Arts Commission. This is the city agency that champions the arts. What changes are you seeing?
Well, I echo Todd. Our office has been inundated with phone calls, and our director, Tom DeCaney, is approached on a daily basis by organizations and artists who are in dire situations. They might be facing eviction from their housing, or their organization's facing eviction from their space. And so, you know, and as the mayor said, affordability is the issue of our time, and the Arts Commission is committed to working with other city agencies who are dealing with issues around affordability. And one good thing I can say is that basically the Arts Commission, the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development are about to issue an RFP to identify an intermediary to distribute the nonprofit supplemental displacement funds, which were recently approved by the Board of Supervisors. They basically took $4.515 million off reserve to help deal with evictions going on in the nonprofit sector. And $2 million of that 4.515 is going directly to help arts and culture organizations. So we hope to have an intermediary in place who has nonprofit real estate expertise to work with nonprofits to help secure long-term leases and more permanent housing in the city, because ultimately we feel that what we didn't do the last time there was a bust and a boom is work with nonprofits on a pathway to ownership, which we feel is a long-term solution.
How does the San Francisco Arts Commission decide which organizations and artists to work with and help?
That's a great question. For this, the intermediary will be issuing its own RFP to dole out the grant, so to speak. And also the Arts Commission has its own grant program, the Cultural Equity Grants Program. In all cases, it's a competitive process. As a city agency, we have to be transparent and we have to ensure that grants are competitive in order to ensure that the distribution of funds are equitable. And so there will be an application process and a vetting process that would most likely entail a panel of people to evaluate the application. I will say for these nonprofit displacement funds that the organization will have to be in good, it will have to be a 501c3 in good financial standing, except for an impending eviction. And that also, just to ensure accountability. Again, you know, we're interested in creating a long-term solution for those nonprofits.
An RFP is Request for Proposal.
Yes, it is. Sorry.
And how can people find out about this program?
Yes, absolutely. So I'm actually, for your listeners, I'm actually collecting contact information for nonprofits who are facing eviction, and I'm culling that information so that once the intermediary is identified, I can pass that information along to them so that when they're ready to issue their request for proposal, they do adequate outreach. And part of what they'll be doing is doing some sort of workshop that explains their process and helps explain the application process and what people can expect and go over the guidelines and whatnot. So your callers are welcome to, or listeners are welcome to find me on the website. My email is Kate, kate.patterson@sfgov.org. They can email me and I'll make sure that they are among the first to know about this.
Okay, great. And we'll put that information on our website, yourcallradio.org. That is Kate Patterson. She's with the San Francisco Arts Commission. And Ellen, you are co-founder and artistic director of Life on the Water. And this is an arts organization at the Fort Mason Center in the 80s and 90s. And it seems like there's a couple things going on here. A lot of people are being displaced. Artists are leaving the city. Gallery owners say they either have to leave or go to a part of the city that's not close to public transportation. But at the same time, we're hearing from Randy Rollison, interim director of the Intersection for the Arts, who says, the fact is the business model is changing, the audience is changing, and it has been for a long time. So since you've been involved in the arts for a couple of decades now, what really strikes you about what we're facing?
I think I'd like to approach that question from a perspective of history. And I think that one of the things that tends to happen when a demographic changes in an area and especially becomes a lot younger is that the approach becomes very ahistorical, you know. And I think that's why people are so devastated by the changes at Intersection, because Intersection is such a long-standing and important organization. It would be like if someone said City Lights Books is going to be no more. Hmm. You know, I think there would be a worldwide organizing to say City Lights Books, you know, is like the Eiffel Tower or the Grand Canyon that humans made, so can we keep it? With that said, I think that these things are not separate from Proposition 13, which happened, you know, in the 70s, where, you know, taxes were cut and a lot of social welfare programs began to get cut. We started to lose arts in the schools. So you have a couple of generations of people that have grown up with no arts education. And then you had the whole displacement of artists, again, like we said, and with the first tech boom, because, of course, the business model was changing. It began to change when Jesse Helms began to really organize the demonization of individual artists. And so what you start to see is that fellowships, California Arts Council used to have a fellowship program that gave artists, you know, a small sum of $5,000. I was a lucky recipient of that when it did exist. And so when you don't have a history of what used to be in terms of sustainable rent control, also property values being, in a way, messed with, you know, so that people who say, oh, I want lower property taxes, therefore, where's that money not going to the school, social welfare programs? And then it all starts to not only change the cultural landscape, but it changes how younger people being born in this landscape think of the arts or social welfare and think of business. You know, in the 80s, it was also the time that sports organizations start talking about professionalizing. And I saw in organizations like Life on the Water where we really got pushed to focus on projects. You know, so there was, you know, multiculturalism, then there was global, and then there we had the solo. And what we saw at Life on the Water is we saw ourselves being swallowed by the projects that we were doing. And it was interesting for me to hear what the interim executive director at Intersection had to say, because it really rang true that you have money for projects, but you don't have money to sustain the day-to-day operation. And so the host is being eaten, in a certain way. And so, I think all those things have to be considered, especially as we move forward. What are we putting into place? And there's so much talk about sustainability, but things are not sustainable if we're not looking at an entire picture, not just an isolated picture of what are we going to do about artists. It's like, what are we going to do about the landscape of humanity right now, which includes the arts, because we'll all be affected by it. So that's where I'm coming from with the bigger picture of things.
That is Ellen Sebastian Chang, director, writer, and creative consultant. She was co-founder and artistic director of Life on the Water, an arts organization at San Francisco's Fort Mason Center in the 80s and 90s. We're also joined by Kate Patterson, communications director with the San Francisco Arts Commission, a city agency that champions the arts, and Todd Thomas Brown, founder and interim artistic director of the Red Poppy Art House and founder of MAP, the Mission Arts Performance Project in San Francisco's Mission District. And on today's Your Call, we are talking about the current state of the arts in Northern California. A lot of people say that they're being displaced. They have no choice but to move because of the tech and the wealth boom. And then you've got people like Randy Rawlinson, interim director at the Intersection, saying the fact is the business model has been changing, and it has been for a long time. So how do you see things playing out in your area? I mean, we're lucky to have so many amazing arts organizations all around us, but what are you seeing in terms of the health of these organizations, how they're surviving? Are you an artist? What are you facing? A lot of people are pointing their fingers to the tech sector because we are seeing so much money coming into many parts of Northern California. We did reach out to Yahoo, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Salesforce. We heard back from Salesforce, but they couldn't find us anyone to come on today's show. So if you are part of the tech sector and you'd like to talk about this issue, if you care about these issues, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. And Todd, what are your thoughts on Randy Rawlinson's comments about the fact that business models are changing, what audiences want are changing, and that's the real reason why Intersection is having problems?
Well, I guess what that makes me think about is, and it's something I've thought about, much in recent years, when you hear the growing influence of the tech sector and the changing nature of audience participation and what is going to be the relationship between the arts and technology, etc. And what I find is a lot of times conversation where it seems like the arts needs to catch up with technology or the arts needs to adapt. I don't know what happened to the arts as being a force of challenging society, of questioning, of leading, of being on a forward edge. If it's all about adapting to the business model, then aren't we just the tail of the dog, so to speak, of an economy? I forget what author it was that had a statement that said something to the effect, does our country have an economy, or is our country the economy? Like, the economy is the end-all, be-all. And we have to deal with the reality of it, of course. When you're running an organization, that's very, very clear to you. But yet I hesitate with the language that seems to be that, well, we need to adapt and we need to sort of follow suit with the direction of things, rather than,
Ellen, do you want to jump in there?
I agree.
And that's not a comment necessarily on Randy directly, but just more the general conversation, because I know Randy and he's been tremendously supportive.
Yeah. I would like to say I absolutely disagree with that. I mean, I agree with what Todd is saying. Recently, I was at Red Poppy Art House. That place was so packed, people couldn't breathe. you know, it was for a kora player, and it was for basically acoustic music, and it was intergenerational. You couldn't have squeezed another body in there, and the excitement in the room was, I mean, it was so heightened. And I think it's because of the proximity of human beings in relationship to each other. And I think that if artists lose their gut instincts and they swallow that we have to mimic a business model, then we are already doing what I'm calling it. We are cultural sharecroppers now. I'm appalled at how the arts are being used, because the artist, when they first went into Soho, when they first went into SoMarch, finally it's the developers, the real estate people and the developers and the land grabbers are finally catching up, going, you know what? We can use artists. We can use them. It hadn't occurred to them before. And I think what we're seeing now is actually how developers have gotten super smart on how to use the arts now. And I think if artists buy into that, we're done as being cultural shamans, you know, as cultural leaders. When has the arts been something that needs to be a business model? You know, yes, there are some art forms that are reproducible. How does a dancer become a business model? How does a dancer, where the life of their body is creating work, how do certain musicians that play certain? So I'm just going to disagree with that and just say I will go to my grave screaming. I am not going to be a business model or a sharecropper, cultural sharecropper for developers.
Kate, you want to jump in?
Yeah, I'd just love to add my two cents. So I think that the nonprofit business model has never been easy, but there are lots of examples of small and mid-sized nonprofit arts organizations who have proven to be very successful. And what they have in common is a very strong board, and they have over time built a reserve to help them weather certain storms, among other things that they do to make themselves successful. You know, the Arts Commission is really open to hearing from your listeners, those who have tried innovative things to augment the way that they their business model, so to speak, or new. I think it's always good to innovate. I think I also want to just let your listeners know that the Arts Commission has a grant to help nonprofit arts organizations with capacity building and administrative efficiencies. So if finances are a struggle for your nonprofit, you know, this grant can help bring in a financial advisor or an interim development director to help build reserves. So there is assistance available to help sort of shore up operations at cultural nonprofits.
Well, and I guess the big question is, how do artists survive? I mean, over the years, we've done so many shows about the arts and the fact that the state of California spending on the arts continues to dip to historic lows. And so, you know, given these realities, how do artists survive? And actually, we're coming up on a break, so we'll tackle that question after the break. Today on Your Call, we are talking about how the changes that we're seeing in Northern California. There's a lot of wealth being brought to the area. At the same time, we're seeing so many artists who have no choice but to leave. Again, we saw this in the 90s. We're seeing it now. Gallery owners are relocating. And then you've got people like Randy Rollison. I keep bringing him up because a lot of people pointed to the tech industry when the Intersection made this announcement. Randy said, it's not about technology. It's not about rent. It's about the business model. And it has been for a long time. So what are your thoughts on this, and how are the arts changing in your area? We'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on Local Public Radio, KALW. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's a toll-free call, 866-798-8255. Or you can send your question or comment to the email inbox, which is feedback@yourcallradio.org. Coming up at 11 o'clock, BBC World Have Your Say. Programming here on KALW is supported in part by SF Public Press, presenting Hack the housing crisis, a day-long workshop to generate creative solutions to San Francisco's affordable housing crisis. The workshop is this Friday, the 13th. Information at sfpublicpress.org.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we'll be joined by Brian Knappenberger, director of The Internet's Own Boy. This documentary is about the programming prodigy and information activist Aaron Swartz. In 2013, while defending himself in a federal criminal case for downloading academic files, he committed suicide. We did a show about this. And the film asks, what do we lose when we are tone deaf about technology and its relationship to our civil liberties? That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about the state of the arts in Northern California, and we'd love to hear from you. What changes are you seeing in your area? If you're an artist, if you work with a nonprofit, and you'd like to talk about how you're surviving, what changes you've seen over the last couple of years, how the audience is changing, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. And because so many fingers are pointed at the tech boom and all the wealth that we're seeing, if you work in the tech industry, we'd also love to hear from you. We did reach out to Yahoo, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Salesforce to find out how they feel about this and if they're getting involved in the arts in the Northern California. And we didn't hear back. We heard back from Salesforce, but they couldn't provide us with anyone for today's show. We are joined by Todd Thomas Brown, founder and interim artistic director of the Red Poppy Art House in San Francisco. Kate Patterson is Communications Director for the San Francisco Arts Commission, a city agency that champions the arts. And Ellen Sebastian Chang is Director, Writer, and Creative Consultant. She was co-founder of Life on the Water, an arts organization at San Francisco's Fort Mason Center in the 80s and the 90s. And we'll talk about how artists are surviving, but first, why don't we go to Carol in Vallejo. Hi, Carol. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I wanted to talk about how difficult it is for artists to find a place to do their art in San Francisco if they didn't buy the place 10 years ago. And I see people, I live in Vallejo, I used to live in the city, and it became just unaffordable. And I found a wonderful place to buy that I could afford, that you couldn't even buy a garage for that amount in the city. And Vallejo is becoming very welcoming to artists. And it's wonderful to see the downtown of Vallejo thriving because of the artists. I think it's the new San Francisco of the 70s.
Really? So tell us more. Yeah. What are you seeing?
Well, the whole downtown now has been revitalized by artists coming in. First, they bought a place a place to do their art, and now they're doing galleries, and it's just, you know, it is becoming an art town. It's wonderful and affordable. And you can just take a ferry boat from here to San Francisco. It's just great.
Well, that's positive news, so thank you so much for calling in. Kate, do you want to talk about that? How do artists survive if they don't own the space they work in?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the fundamental issue. What I can say is that in the fall, Mayor Lee and Supervisor Kim, they convened a working group on nonprofit displacement, and that working group consisted of a number of city agencies, and the working group published a report, which was part of the impetus around the Nonprofit Displacement Supplemental Fund. And in that report, they put forward a lot of long-term solutions that the city will continue to work on. And one of those is identifying available space. Our office hears a lot from folks who want to know what the city is doing with its own property, some of which is underutilized. And unfortunately, the way that works is that underutilized city-owned property is earmarked for affordable housing. And if it is not appropriate for affordable housing, usually it has a number of rehabilitation issues that are sort of cost prohibitive. Or if it's sold, that those funds go automatically to affordable housing. But all that being said, given the climate that we're in, the city is really committed to looking at underutilized city-owned property with fresh eyes to identify space that can be rented below market value to nonprofits. In addition to that, they're also looking to the private sector to identify spaces that may not be that obvious. So, for example, the Office of Economic and Workforce Development has an Invest in Neighborhoods program where they have an inventory of empty storefronts. And so the city in that way could be a sort of a matchmaker for artists who are looking for low-rent studio spaces. There's also looking at the property that was formerly under the jurisdiction of the former redevelopment office, looking at SROs, you know, any place where there might be a sort of a shared space opportunity. So the city is committed, you know, as part of this suite of long-term solutions into really investigating that thoroughly and then making those resources available to artists.
Well, we've got a related question from George in San Francisco. Hi, George.
Hi. Short question, but one wonders if this question has come and gone already or if it's time to revisit. What about rent subsidies for artists?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, what I could say about this wave of funding that's going to come forward through the Nonprofit Displacement Supplemental Fund is that it is not going to subsidize rents for artists because we feel it'll further incentivize landlords to increase the rent. And so, again, you know, we don't feel that that is a prudent use of taxpayer dollars because it doesn't... It doesn't create a long-term solution. You know, it is certainly that comes up, but that's our position on that.
Todd or Ellen, do you have anything to add on that one?
Well, I think because we've seen over the past, I think, three or four decades, that the cost of living has not increased, but paying for rent is something like 70% of people's income. So again, I don't want to just separate and say artists should have this. I mean, the working people should have affordable housing, period, because I've lived in the Bay since 1970, and I remember when I moved here, as a young high school student, I worked a part-time job, I went to college, and I also started my arts career in college. There was the CETA program, which was a program that paid artists to work in different theaters. That was a governmental, you know, it was very much like the WPA program. So I got paid above minimum wage to begin my career my work as a lighting tech at the Berkeley Stage Company. Hmm. And so I think, again, we have to look at history and what programs, the WPA is a great program. There's situations where I think Project Arto is a great example of something that started a long, long time ago. I think they bought their building in the late 70s, and artists are living there, and they're maintaining that, and it can only be passed on to other artists. I think there's so many models, but I think, again, we have to look at, I think what Todd said was correct. Do we have, and what is our economy, or is economy all we are? Because there's more to life. And we know that that's what the arts is trying to teach us in terms of our soul and our creative spirits. And I think that I read something where a developer said, oh, yeah, you know, we know that artists coming to the building get added value to the building, and then we can sell it for market rate or above. And I just questioned that, and I thought, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about values, or are we talking about price tags?
Well,
you know, because we can't just keep talking about price tags.
We have,
what is the value of life?
We have a related email from Ruby who says, what is the point of working, commuting, paying rent and other bills if we can't have music, dance, theater, art in all forms? What's the point? We need to have our souls touched, our hearts opened. We need to laugh and cry together. We must appreciate that someone is sacrificing in order to bring us to a higher plane, which indeed is what makes us human. And she also brings up the question that others have brought up. What can we do to underwrite art in all forms so the presenters don't get to the point where they're facing eviction? Can't we, through taxes or otherwise, help sustain them before they're in dire straits? Todd, do you feel like there's support for artists at a time when so many people are struggling to make ends meet and pay their rent? What are you hearing from the community?
That's really, you know, it's a hard question because artists always are living with very, very, very little support.
Right.
Because it's not, in many ways, it's just not viable. If it's all about the economy, it's not a viable option, you know, and then people expect you to do it just because it's your passion and you should do it for sub-minimum wage because, well, you get to do it because that's what you want to do, so why should you really get paid? Something, as we're talking, that I feel like I want to throw in there and talking, you know, myself as an artist, a lot of times as artists, we are telling stories or sharing stories in some sort of form. So there's the one side of all the different policies in the cities and the conversations around that and issues to share just another side more on the side of story is I think how we need a vision, a larger vision that really connects everybody. In the sense of like a storyline that gets people engaged, gets people involved. Mm-hmm. When I think of in the arts, a lot of times we talk about the ecosystem of the arts. And when you think of an ecosystem and what is a healthy ecosystem, it's the biodiversity. It's the richness of diversity in that. Now, that's a vision that people could connect with across many levels. Because whether it's new people coming into the city that are more affluent, they actually lose. And this, they lose differently, but they lose out when their culture becomes more monocultural, right? So the challenging thing is how to discuss all these issues without polarizing, right? Ellen brings in a fantastic perspective of reminding us there's a historic pattern at work here. We can take it, you know, even further that the patterns of displacement are historic. They go back hundreds of years. What we see today is a playing out of the same pattern repeating itself. And I think one of the challenges is that when it comes to different policies and different ways of support that are needed, they're generally not enough. There's always so many people, both in the arts and outside the arts, that are under the radar that will not qualify or will not reach those supports. And they are part of the vital ecosystem that makes the city rich and diverse.
I'd love to just bridge those two ideas because I think both of you bring up great points. And what I want to say is that, unfortunately, occupations do not constitute a protected class. So we're not able to create housing, especially for artists. And I think from the Arts Commission's perspective, what we would love to see is sort of more cohesion in terms of advocacy among artists and making sure that artists are joining their voices with other affordable housing advocates, because collectively those voices will be much stronger. And the Arts Commission serves the public of San Francisco, as does the mayor. And so we are responsive to those voices. So I just wanted to, again, go back to what the caller is saying. I mean, you know, we would love to create special housing and incentives just for artists, but artists are in the same boat as teachers, who probably feel they contribute just as much to the ecosystem and are. And so it's important that everyone be working together towards creating a more sustainable and affordable environment here in San Francisco. And the Arts Commission can just make sure that artists are represented at the table.
And I think to jump in, it's like realizing that the city, the Arts Commission, foundations can only do so much. You know, traditionally, arts organizations are highly dependent on donors, individual donors, the people from your community that are investing. You know, so part of that thing of needing a vision where people begin to realize, wait, we actually need this in order to have a healthy society, healthy community, my healthy neighborhood. Let me invest. Let me participate in this because I want this in my city. You know?
And that is Todd Thomas. Oh, go ahead, Ellen.
Yeah, I think what Kate said is absolutely right in piggybacking that, and that's what I'm saying too. But it's not about artists having housing. It's about everyone having affordable housing, healthy food. It's a human rights issue. Housing, healthcare, all of these things. And where we don't want to lose our artists is sometimes our artists can shine a different light on that through music or dance or painting that opens up the hearts and minds of people that may not have been able to understand a particular issue. And that's where we don't want to not only lose the, as Todd's saying, the diversity of artists we have, we also want to look at that we don't want to create a monoculture. I think a lot of tech people, you know, and I hate saying tech people and hipsters, you know, and, you know, again, it's like these, you know, codifying words that separate people. So, but I do think there are people in certain forms of work, if they're making a lot of money, who they also see themselves as creative people, as people that are making a product that has the capability of you know, bringing in a high income, be it they're creating Facebook or Twitter. Although, I mean, I just have to joke and say, I tell my daughter all the time, and I go, look, all it takes is an ecological disaster, and where is Twitter? You still better learn how to use just a pencil or how to tell a story in a good way. I mean, because I think we're under some illusion that these things also are forever. And we know nothing's forever except if human beings keep being created, we're the closest thing to forever that's going on. And I just see that things have accelerated in a way that they didn't 50 years ago, that it makes these changes a lot faster. And it's harder for people to keep up with. I mean, I think that's part of the issue. It's just hard to keep up with the accelerated change that's happening.
And that is Ellen Sebastian Chang, director, writer, and creative consultant. Todd Thomas Brown is founder and interim artistic director of the Red Poppy Art House and founder of MAP, the Mission Arts Performance Project in San Francisco's Mission District. And Kate Patterson is communications director with the San Francisco Arts Commission, a city agency that champions the arts. And if you'd like to join us, we have two lines open, 866-798-8255. How can artists and arts nonprofits survive and thrive in a place where rent is becoming so high and a lot of people are being displaced? Things are just changing rapidly, as all of our guests have said today. So what are your thoughts on this issue? What changes are you seeing in your area? If you're an artist or if you love to go to dance performances, live music, theater, what are your thoughts on these issues? 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. And let's go next to Sean in San Francisco. Hi, Sean. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Rose. Thanks a lot. I'm part of the Arts Commission Street Artist Program, and I joined that around 4 years ago, and I do really well with it. I mostly just go on Saturdays and Sundays down to the Ferry Building, and I sell fine art. I do statues. I do original paintings, and I do prints as well. In doing small shows like that, I got picked up by the National Parks Conservancy, and I've had a 3-year contract with them where they sell two of my prints at Crissy Field and at the Golden Gate Bridge. So I've had a really successful run with the arts program, and the interesting thing about trying to sell art or being an artist is everyone's fishing in the same pond with different bait. And you never know who's going to be standing in front of you. So from an artist's perspective, the most humbling thing is always to sell a piece of art. And then a person takes a piece of your art home, hangs it up, or displays the statue, and that's just like a wonderful feeling. And that's something that I don't think everyone gets. And I've sold art to Salesforce, and I've sold art to lots of other tech people, but I also sell it just to tourists and other people who are just passing by. So I think what everyone seems to be missing is that the way to survive as an artist is to somehow sell your art and feed yourself. And I don't know if any of the people calling in so far have had to feed themselves with their art.
Well, thank you. We're going to just take a few more calls because we have full lines, and then we'll get responses from our guests. So thanks for calling in, Sean. Let's go next to Jessica in San Francisco. Hi, Jessica.
Hi, my name is Jessica Robinson Love, and I'm the executive and artistic director of Counterpulse. And I wanted to just talk a little bit about our story as a nonprofit arts organization that's a performing arts space, because I think it's illustrative of what's happening in the city, but also perhaps provides a bright spot for what's possible. So Counterpulse was founded as 8 Freight Community Space over on Divisadero Street, and we actually lost our space during the last dot-com boom, and we got our current space at 9th and Mission really because of the bubble bursting. And I've been saying over and over again, you know, we don't want to count on that happening twice. So we've been at Mission and 9th for 10 years, and a couple of years ago, we really saw this affordability crisis coming and began working on a permanent solution to get us out of the rental market. So we started talking to funders and talking to our community about, you know, how do we stop this cycle? So we have had the opportunity to partner with CAST, which is short for the Community Arts Stabilization Trust, and they are offering us the opportunity to lease to purchase a permanent home that's on Turk Street at the intersection of the Tenderloin and Central Market. And, you know, what's interesting about our partnership with CAST is that Counterpulse is an example of an organization that has a very strong financial position. We have an amazing board. Our performances are sold out every weekend. And even so, you know, we wouldn't be able to afford to stay in the city if it weren't for this opportunity. So we are at the start of a major capital campaign. We still have lots of money to raise. But because CAST has secured the property for us, we're able to do that over time. And we wouldn't be able to do that without the foothold in the market that this opportunity is giving us. And the amazing thing about it is that when we're successful with our project, we raise the money to buy the building, that money will go back into the trust, and then will go to the next nonprofit arts organization to help them buy their building. And simultaneously to that, Counterpulse, the property that we have, will be deed restricted, which means even if we outgrow it in 20 years, our kids and grandkids will always be able to go to that building, and it will be an affordable nonprofit arts space. So I really see CAST as an exciting and important model because it provides technical assistance to arts nonprofits and real estate expertise. And I'm also really excited about the allocation from the Board of Supervisors to help, you know, displacement of nonprofits, arts organizations. It's a tiny bit of money. It's really just a start. But I think tech companies can be part of the solution, either through CBA agreements or through them just being generous and philanthropic on their own.
Well, let me ask you just quickly, Jessica, because you brought that up. I mean, we reached out to a couple different tech companies, Yahoo, Twitter, and I want to make sure I have it right. Yahoo, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Salesforce. Are you in contact with any tech companies? I mean, have they reached out to you to find out how they can get involved?
We are, absolutely. We have an open conversation with Twitter right now. Zendesk is also a phenomenally responsive tech company that has really reached out, and their CEO has actually been to our building, which is an old foreign theater that's, you know, going to be a construction site soon, and has said, what can I do? How can I help? So I think we need to come up with, you know, a constructive, unified message about how these tech companies can really contribute to the solution, because, you know, our vision for Counterpulse is that it's going to be a place where an SRO resident from the Tenderloin can walk out of their free dance class and run into a tech employee who's on their lunch break, who can run into an artist coming out of a rehearsal. And I think that's the ball game. And I think most of these folks actually, they do want to help. They don't want to destroy the culture that grew them to San Francisco, but we need to give them a really concerted way to do that, and a way that, as Kate says, is sustainable. It's not just about rent subsidy, but it's about ownership.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Jessica. That's Jessica Robinson, Executive and Artistic Director of Counterpulse in San Francisco. We've got an email from Mark who says, as a city or society, we should really consider whether it's wise to remove sources of art and music and blight our cities more. If we really want art in our lives, then we must consume it to support it. So go to shows, support the arts, you know, find out what's going on in your community. Mark, I'm sorry. We don't have time for more callers, but thank you, Mark, for the email. Todd, we've got about a minute left. What are your final thoughts on where you see this is going, and what can people do who want to make sure that we have a thriving arts scene?
I think what Jessica mentioned about people not wanting to destroy the culture of the city that they come into, that makes perfect sense, right? And that challenge that she proposed is, how do we come up with a unified vision that actually gives people avenues and clarity of both how and why to support the arts? And that needs to also be, I think, couched in a comprehensive vision that, like Ellen is talking about, of housing as a human right. And as I mentioned, like an ecosystem kind of vision where you want to see the robustness of all people at all levels of society participating, having a place to live, having access, and like that. But the challenge is, I think, is there's just such absence of understanding or knowledge and or even awareness that would generate the interest to participate in a deep and meaningful way. So trying to come up with a vision for that kind of participation, and I think, is central.
And Ellen, final thoughts, about 30 seconds.
I'll just echo what Todd said, and also that, again, we have to just look at history a little bit deeper so that we don't keep making the same mistakes.
And Kate, final thoughts?
Yeah, I just want to just sort of touch upon what Sean said, is that I think artists should look at some business models to feed themselves with their art. There's some great examples: Foggy Notion in the inner Richmond, and Three Fish Studio, which is both our studio/retail space where they actually sell their work directly. And I'm so glad Jessica Robinson Love brought up CAS, because that's certainly something the city is looking at as a best practice, as well as the Central Market Partnership. And all these organizations are designed to help nonprofits build capacity and move towards ownership.
Kate Patterson is with the San Francisco Arts Commission. Todd Thomas Brown is founder and interim artistic director of the Red Poppy Art House. And Ellen Sebastian Chang is a director, writer, and creative consultant. Thank you all for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for doing this show. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. How did Aaron Swartz change the way we think about online activism? On the next Your Call, we'll speak with Brian Knappenberger, director of The Internet's Own Boy. The film is about the programming prodigy and information activist Aaron Swartz. In 2013, while defending himself in a federal criminal case for downloading academic files, he committed suicide. The film asks, what do we lose when we're tone-deaf about technology and its relationship to our civil liberties? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Joe Burke is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.